Welcome to the SEI podcast series, a production of Carnegie Mellon University's Software Engineering Institute. Software Engineering Institute is a federally funded research and development center housed at Carnegie Mellon University. My name is William Hayes, and I am a principal engineer at the Software Engineering Institute. Today, I'm joined by my colleague from the Emerging Technology Center, Satya Beniti, who is here to talk with us about her latest research in real-time biometric data acquisition. And so if we could start with a little bit of background on where you've been in your career and what brought you to this location.
Thank you. So I've been in industry for 18 plus years, and I was always interested in research. And so about 1 year and 4 months ago, I joined the Software Engineering Institute. And it's been really great because I feel that I'm a liaison between the university and the government and industry. And so that's kind of where I always wanted to be, to take something that has been already developed in the research side and find practical applications for it, especially in the government sector.
So with the bit of research we're here to talk about today, you're really very much on the leading edge. Could you give just a thumbnail sketch of the technology we're here to talk about?
Sure. So I kind of want to talk very briefly about biometrics in general. So biometrics is the science of measuring and analyzing biological data. And really, when we talk about biometrics, there's two distinct phases. There's active and passive biometrics. Mm. We talk about active biometrics, it requires, when we actually collect the data, it's invasive and we need to have contact with the subject. And nowadays, we're talking about passive biometrics, where it's completely non-invasive and we don't need any contact with the subject. Mm. And the analysis is done in real time. So we have all kinds of applications like machine emotional intelligence and behavior prediction and sentiment analysis, in addition to all the traditional things like authentication and identification, which active biometrics is used for. So we're really looking at passive biometrics, and we're looking at how we can use that to increase machine emotional intelligence. And by that, I mean how machines can detect, understand, and respond to their users' emotions in real time. Mm. And Dr. Andy Moore, who is the dean of the School of Computer Science at CMU, said that he predicted that 2016 is the watershed year for machine emotional intelligence. And so we're really on the cutting edge of technology here. And that's what I do my research on.
So if you could, for the layperson, give us some detail on what the technology is and how it comes to be.
Sure. So what's out there today that is the state of the art deals with practical lab settings. That is, it doesn't deal with motion. And so what we wanted to do is we wanted to deal with faces in motion, with expressions and changing illuminations. And so what we did for that is we took a technique called facial landmarking, which takes a face and marks 68 points on that face as features or landmarks of that face. And as the face moves from frame to frame in a video, it tracks the face. So it can deal with plus minus 90 degrees motion along the pitch, yaw, and roll directions. It can also deal with occlusions, which is covering of the face either intentionally with my hand or facial hair. And it can also deal with changing illumination. And what it does is it gives X and Y coordinates for each of these points along with confidence numbers, right? But what's out there that is the face landmarking, which is the state of the art, is slow. It's robust, but it's slow. So what we wanted to do is get it fast enough to happen in real time. So we implemented it on graphical processing units. So that's GPUs. And we were able to bring it from about 20 seconds per frame to 0.2 seconds per frame.
Okay.
Now, we have open source facial landmarking out there that's even faster, that's 0.02 seconds per frame. But that's not as robust because it can't deal with as much motion or occlusions because it doesn't give us confidence numbers. So what we did is we got the state-of-the-art fast enough that we can now use a hybrid of open source and the state-of-the-art facial landmarking. So we run them both in parallel, and we use the open source landmarking. But ever so often, we do a sanity check with the state-of-the-art but slightly slower, more robust landmarking system. So that's what we did. We kind of did a hybrid approach of the open source, which is much faster, but we got state-of-the-art fast enough by putting it on GPU so that we can combine these two And that's how we make it happen in real time. And so we kind of get the best of both worlds. That is, we get robustness, but we make it happen fast in real time.
And the reliance on GPUs allows you to lower the technological barrier so that this can be done without a very expensive lab setting. You can do this in a much more reachable technology.
Correct. So smartphones right now are being equipped with GPUs. So the iPhone 6 and I think the Android, it's called the HTC Desire i1 or something like that. Both these phones have have GPUs on them. So GPUs are becoming more and more embedded in widely available technology.
So if we think about the potential for adoption of your research results, this lowering the technological barrier really speeds up the ability for the industries that might find benefit from this technology to adopt and run with it.
Yeah, I would think so.
Marvelous. So this is very much about how humans interact with computers and maybe opening new channels for input.
Absolutely, yes.
More dynamic interaction.
Yeah, it's like teaching the machine emotional intelligence and body language and things like that, which is how we as humans interact with each other.
So maybe there are even applications for this in amusement park rides. We detect that the motion of the ride has a particular effect on the riders.
Right, and we can think about things like games and training and things like that. If you do military training, you can see how the person's responding to something in real time, looking at their heart rate, for instance, seeing how it increases or decreases and things like that. And you could ramp up or ramp down the game, corresponding to how the user is reacting.
And I remember some time ago going through an airport in Asia where there was an outbreak of flu, and they were monitoring the temperature of people coming through to offer assistance to people who might be ill. So there are safety-related applications that go beyond that crude measure that we saw there. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I actually think the medical applications are amazing. And so I'm from India. And if you look at all the developing countries, more people have access to smartphones than they have to healthcare. So you can imagine how something like this, if we implemented on smartphones, would really revolutionize something. And we're looking actually at porting what I'm doing on smartphones. And so there's all kinds of medical applications. There's also things like if you're looking at the rate of flow of blood in the face and you detect that it's flowing at different rates in this half of the face versus this half, that might be an impending stroke. So there's all kinds of applications, medical. And also, I recall the Ebola virus when it came. People were looking at body temperatures, and now you could just get that from video.
So in the application relating to strokes, limited as my understanding is, the subtleties of diagnosing very minor strokes, this would be a way to break a new frontier in how much clarity we can get there.
Absolutely, because you're looking at different regions of the face and seeing how the heart rate or the blood flow differs in those regions.
So I watched a video that's referenced in your blog post about baby monitors, and I remember being a new parent and looking in on the child to make sure he was still with us and being nervous. And it was fascinating to see how the algorithms allow us to magnify subtle movements and detect indeed my child is breathing and moving in subtle ways. So are there applications, that seems a more passive application where we're monitoring. Could you speak a little of those kinds of applications?
Sure. So first, our work is inspired by work that came out of MIT CSAIL, which stands for Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Lab. And they came up with something called Eulerian video magnification, and they say that it makes the invisible visible. So what it does is it takes latent frequencies that are already there in video, and it magnifies them so that we can see that with the human eye. And one of the things they did is they went to the neonatal unit, and they had babies. You don't really want to strap anything on them because they're so small and tiny and fragile, and they were monitoring their heart rate through video. So that's one application. You can also think of things like when you have sensitive meetings, say in embassies and consulates, where you're looking and trying to see how a person reacts to questions or something like that. And also at all these border patrols and security checkpoints, you can be monitoring people for safety issues.
So it seems the pace at which we can digest and interpret the data is the frontier where you're really focusing your work, that making this a real-time application is a big challenge. Could you talk about that?
Right. So there's actually two big challenges. There's making it real-time, but there's also making it practical. Hmm. So if you look at the state of the art right now, it works very well with lab settings, where the person is extremely still, no facial expressions, and the lighting is exactly how you want it to be. But that's not how it is in real life, right? So people are in motion all the time, their facial expressions, and the lighting is changing. And so what we're trying to do is make the recently possible practical, right? Mm. So we're taking things where we want to do this in natural settings where people are moving, have different facial expressions and even occlusions, like I might do this or I might do that, and you no longer can see this region. So that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to take something that's already well established in the research field and making it happen in practical settings.
So very much in keeping with the theme of emerging technologies, which is the center where you work.
Right.
So the practical applications you see in the near term, the customer set who you see adopting and running with this, could you talk a little bit about that?
Right. So I think one of the things I'm excited about is machine emotional intelligence. So in our center, we look at a lot. We deal with autonomy, right? And so when we look at human-machine interaction, really we talk about how machines and humans can live together almost symbiotically, right? So there's an example where I might have a robotic chef which is helping me in my kitchen. Hmm. And the chef might actually pick up a knife to do something, and I might get a little scared because I don't know why they're doing it. And if the chef can see, or if the robot can see that my heart rate has escalated, it can either explain why it's doing it or move back a little bit. So that's how humans and machines can work together in tandem. So our work, I think, actually helps machines and humans work better together.
So you've just made me think a bit about the black boxes we have in aircraft or other transportation mechanisms. We want to be able to reconstruct the final seconds before some disastrous event. It would seem there may be applications here where we can understand what the pilot was experiencing at the time and help us put things together.
Absolutely.
Is there any development along those lines that you could talk about?
So I think where we'd like to take this research is to answer things like how can we transition it to the real world, maybe put it on different platforms, and then deal with also distance, for instance, right? So how far the camera is from the person's face, doing multiple subjects at the same time. So we talk about scalability, where you want to increase that, and then portability, and then usability, right? So also things like it, right now we have certain configuration parameters that we have to tweak depending on the subject. My heart rate can be faster than yours, or depending on the speed of the camera, or even depending upon the application. For instance, you can think of polygraphs as an application. And how big should my sampling window be? Do I want to detect peaks in 5-minute intervals and 5-second intervals? How fast am I asking you the questions? So we kind of want to automatically adapt to the human subject, to the surroundings, to the camera, to the application. So we want to do research in how can maybe we can do some learning and figure this out, maybe deep learning, machine learning, and then how do we also transition it to practical applications.
So is there also an integration with multiple modes of data collection, that there may be other streams of data to be integrated with?
That's a great point. So if we look at things like audio, for instance, right, I think there's research which shows that the pitch of the voice can show the emotion of the person. Mm. If we look at facial expressions and gaze and posture, and we also look at lexical analysis, for instance, so I'm talking and maybe the words I'm using, and the heart rate I'm looking at. So if we can combine all these together, that would be great. That would be like a multimodal emotion analysis platform, and we would really be able to teach the machine how to do body language and how to, emotionally understand its user.
So when we think of multi-factor authentication for people having legitimate access to systems, the possibilities here are fairly profound, I imagine.
Right, so I think that there's research that has shown that every individual has a unique cardiac signature. Mm. So imagine if we could do something like identify you just by your heartbeat, or looking, look at your ECG, and completely non-invasive.
And the door opens as you approach it.
Yeah. That would be fantastic.
Fascinating.
So, and there's not much you can do to fake that.
No. So. Yeah, I saw in the reading that it can analyze, that we have machines that can analyze the gait, the pace, your posture even can
Correct.
Speak about who you are.
That's
really fascinating that we can go this far in real time. That's quite an ambitious frontier.
Right.
So near term, what is your research targeting? What can we look to see from you coming soon?
So I think, as I said, I'd like to make this more automatically adaptable to, as I said, the actual subject and the surroundings and the application. And I'd also like to see some, look at engineering challenges, how to transition it to practical settings on different platforms. We're really looking at things like smartphones. So the way we have made this faster is to make it, make the algorithms run on GPUs or graphical processing units. And nowadays, more and more phones are equipped with GPUs. Mm. So we would like to. We've already made some initial experiments on actually porting it to iPhones and the Android phone. We'd also look at, I'm trying to see if we can combine multiple feeds, like thermal feeds, because then you can use it at night and see, if we can do what we call facial landmarking on a thermal feed. So I'm really excited, but I think one of the most, one of the most exciting things for me, as you said, is to combine different, input from different sensors and kind of combine all that together and have a machine that really understands human.
So I understand you've brought a video that demonstrates this technology. Could we have a look at that?
Sure, absolutely.
Oh, great.
So this is a little demonstration we did of my colleague Chase Midler, who has worked on this. You can see he's in a very naturalistic setting. He's drinking coffee. He's talking to us. And you can see his heart rate is around 64.8 beats per minute. That's a resting heart rate. We have a few graphs that I'll talk to you about. But Chase is going to get up now and do 50 jumping jacks. You can see him doing the jumping jacks here. And he actually has a Fitbit. And he was talking. We, cut the audio. But he figured out that this detects his heart rate, his increased heart rate, faster than the Fitbit. So the Fitbit took a while to catch up. But you can see now his heart rate now is 79.2 beats per minute. And there's three graphs. The first one shows the raw pixel intensities over time. Mm. The second one shows the trend of the mean heart rate over time. And the last one's the peak. And it's now slowing down. And that's all we had, the
Great.
Human.
And you've worked with a number of collaborators. I think you've mentioned at least one so far. Are others that you'd want to talk a little bit about the work you're doing with?
Right. So I've worked with Professor Mario Savidis, who is the director of biometrics at Scilab. Mm. We also coordinated with Dr. Chris Catani, who is a professor of computer vision at Robotics Institute. And he really helped us kind of with some of the computer vision algorithms.
So bringing multiple streams of research together, another testament to the engineering at the Emerging Technology Center. That really is a nice opportunity.
Yeah. And one thing I forgot to mention, one of the applications that I'm also excited about, which I forgot to mention, is we can use this to actually detect doctoring of videos. So there's a lot of, as the technology develops, there's also bad people who use this for their own purposes. So when I went to a conference earlier this year, there was a group from Stanford and Max Planck Institute, and they showed, I think it's called Face to Face, where they can, in real time, put their expressions onto a video. And so now we looked at, if we look at the original video and the doctored video, and we look for heart rate in different regions of the face, it's very easy for us to find that this video has been doctored, because you can see that you get completely different heart rates at different points, as compared to the original video.
So you can defeat intentional deception.
Right.
And as we look at the way communication occurs today, there's more and more FaceTime, there's video-based, and my children's use of Snapchat with all the different features. You can defeat attempts to doctor. That's fascinating.
Right.
Sadia, thank you very much for joining us today. This has been very interesting.
Thank you, Will.
And I hope you will come back and give us an update as your research progresses.
I hope so, too. Thank you.
Sadia has also written a blog post, which is available on the SEI's website, and we encourage you all to explore that. We will include resources relating to publications from Sadia and her colleagues with the post of this podcast. As always, this podcast is available on the SEI's website at www.sei.cmu.edu/podcasts. It's also available on Carnegie Mellon University's iTunes website, as well as SEI's YouTube channel. As always, if you have any questions, please don't hesitate to reach out. Thank you.